client with anxiety disorders.
It's time now for Super Psychologist, Dr. Mara Karpel, and your golden years.
Good evening, and welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years. This evening and every Sunday evening, 5 to 7 p.m. Central Time, that's 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. You can hear the show again by going to my website, drmarakarpel.com. That's drmarakarpel.com. Again, that's drmarakarpel.com. And the link to the podcast will be posted later tonight. And you can also hear the podcast as soon as 5 minutes after the show ends by going to blogtalkradio.com. / your golden years. And for information from this show and updates about upcoming shows, go to my website, drmarakarpel.com. Go to blogtalkradio.com / your golden years and follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, your golden years. Want to advertise your business? Send me an email to drmara@drmarakarpel.com or send me a message through my website or give me a call at 512-626-6973. This evening's show was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by the bra lady, Sonia Das, helping every woman have a perky day. In Austin, call Sonia at 512-898-9058 or go to haveaperkyday.com. This evening's program is also sponsored by Storyhouse. Our friends over at Live Oak Legacies have enlivened their services to encourage story sharing from every generation and have changed their name to Storyhouse. Storyhouse gathers your stories and turns them into multimedia collections that can be shared now and for generations to come. Have Storyhouse over to conduct a private interview in your home or invite them to your next big event or family reunion. Storyhouse, where memories live. Find out more at yourstoryhouse.com or call 512-296-8752. And today is Sunday, August the 3rd, and we are back broadcasting in beautiful Austin, Texas. And it's another warm day here in Austin, and we're cooling it off right here, broadcasting from the office of Accomplice Entertainment in the Intelligent Office Suite on the 15th floor of the Frost Bank Building on Congress Avenue. And Art Mendoza of Accomplice Entertainment, producer of the show, is here doing the production engineering with help from Russell Templeton, and they will be taking your calls. So if you have any questions, give a call and say hi to Art or Russell. And if this is the first time that you're tuning in, I'm a licensed psychologist from New York City, practicing in Austin, Texas, and the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And I work with adults of all ages and have a specialty of working with seniors and caregivers. And for the past few years, I have been evaluating veterans for PTSD. And you can listen to all of the previous podcasts of this show by going to my website, Dr. Mara Karpel. I'm going to spell that for you again. That's drmarakarpel.com. Or go to Blog Talk Radio. And again, that's blogtalkradio.com/ your golden years. And for this evening's show, we have another great lineup. In the first hour, joining us right here in the virtual studio here in the Frost Bank Building, we have neurologist, memory specialist, author of the book, Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask, and chairman of the Capital of Texas chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, Dr. Ronald DeVere, is here, and he will be discussing the new simple guidelines for evaluating and treating Alzheimer's disease that were recently put together by the Texas Council on Alzheimer's Disease. And Dr. DeVere is chair of that committee that put together these new guidelines, and he'll be discussing it with his half-full glass approach. And then stay tuned for the second hour when we'll be joined once again by the Jasmanian Devil, Tomas Ramirez, who will fill us in on what he's been up to since the last time he was on the show and what projects he's currently working on, and we'll be playing some of his original music. And I'm going to do a little talking in between about a couple of different topics, and I hope that you'll find them interesting. And throughout the show, I will have time to take your questions, and Dr. DeVere will have time to take your questions. So if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to give a call. The toll-free number is 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. And if you don't want to give a call but you do have a question, then send me a tweet or an email, and I will read your questions over the air. And Dr. DeVere will answer your questions. The email address to send it to, again, is drmara at drmaracarpel.com. And my Twitter address is M-A-R-A-E-K. So the first that I want to talk about is coffee. And, you know, I talk a lot on this show about food and mood and various health issues, and I talk a lot about psychological well-being, emotional well-being, and I think that coffee kind of fits into all of those categories. So I want to start by saying that I'm not here to bash coffee, because I love coffee. I love how it tastes. I love how it feels going down. I love the ritual around having coffee. Either I'm brewing it myself, or I'm sitting in a coffee house with a nice cup of hot coffee. In fact, many of these shows that I've sat and written down what I was going to talk about and written outlines for and come up with ideas have been done sitting in a coffee house, enjoying the smell of coffee in the air, listening to the music and listening to people chattering around me and my nice hot cup of coffee sitting next to my computer. So I am not against coffee. I also sometimes love how it feels after I drink coffee, right? It makes it tends to make people feel sharper. It makes me feel a little bit sharper and more awake, and it actually can improve your mood until it doesn't, right? I can enjoy the feeling of caffeinated coffee when I drink it in small amounts, but I can usually tell when I have crossed that threshold into too much, and that's when I start to feel edgy, easily frustrated, anxious, and sometimes I even get a little shaky or feel my heart racing if I've done too much of that. There are times where halfway, you know, in the middle of doing an evaluation, I notice that I'm feeling kind of rushed and, you know, oh, we have to get through this real quickly, and I'm feeling really tensed up, and then I realize, oh, yeah, I had that extra cup of coffee this afternoon at lunchtime, so I have to take a few breaths and chill out until that caffeine starts to wear off. So, you know, I know when I've had too much coffee, but I'm not sure that everybody recognizes when they've had too much coffee, and that can be a problem. So let me first talk about the positive, and that is, you know, every time a study comes out showing the benefits of drinking coffee, I get excited. I'm thrilled to have this one guilty pleasure carry with it less guilt and more pleasure for me. And there are, in fact, some findings that are positive. A lot of them are still pretty tentative. They're just a few that have supported these positive results, so the jury is still kind of out about it. But for example, there have been some findings that caffeinated drinks can be one factor in decreasing the risk of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. And maybe Dr. DeVere can touch on that a little bit later to see if this is really something we can believe. And as I said, so far what I found in the research is that the findings are tentative, but so far they show that moderate coffee intake, that's 3 to 5 cups, and those are not the big Starbucks cups. These are just your normal cups, teacups of caffeinated coffee per day may decrease the risk of Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and may decrease the negative cognitive effects of stroke. Caffeine has been found to improve some cognitive functioning in older adults in moderate amounts, and it has been found to improve mood of adults of all ages. Again, as long as you don't drink too much. In a 10-year study that was published in the Archives of Internal Medicine, the results showed that women who drank 2 to 3 cups of caffeinated coffee per day were 15% less likely than women who drank 1 cup or less to develop depression during the course of the 10-year study. And those women who drank 4 or more cups of coffee had about a 20% lower risk of depression. I don't know about their anxiety rates, though, at that amount of coffee, but they had less depression. And some earlier studies found that people who drink caffeinated coffee have a lower rate of suicide than those people who don't. And it was found that people with Parkinson's disease who drank coffee had some reduction in their uncontrolled movements from Parkinson's disease. So there are some positive effects of coffee. As I mentioned, just anecdotally, just from my own experience, I know that I feel a little bit happier after I have a cup of coffee. But then again, too much, it can quickly shift to more irritation and frustration. So there's a fine line. Beware when you get getting too excited about this. There's a fine line between feeling good from coffee and feeling bad from coffee. And one of the negative effects of coffee is that too much caffeine can increase cortisol, which is the stress hormone. And cortisol is the hormone that we produce when we believe that we're in danger. It also can produce an increase of adrenaline as well, which these are the chemicals that our body produces when we are in the fight or flight reaction, when we feel that we are in danger and we need to have that extra energy to fight off the danger or run away from it. But the problem is that prolonged production of these chemicals, especially cortisol, can cause agitation, anxiety, irritability, and impaired sleep. Even if you drink the caffeine during the day, it can affect your sleep at night. And while many people find that a little bit of caffeine helps to sharpen their thinking, the overproduction of cortisol actually interferes with cognitive production. So when your performance, so when you're real agitated, it's really hard to think straight. Cortisol also raises blood pressure. So people who have high blood pressure need to be careful when they're drinking coffee, because the coffee, as I said, produces cortisol, which contributes to high blood pressure. It lowers immune functioning, and it causes imbalance in blood sugar. It also increases abdominal fat, which can lead to a greater risk of heart attack and stroke. So these are some pretty negative effects of drinking too much coffee or producing too much cortisol from the way that we think as well. I mean, cortisol is not just produced by coffee, but it's produced by agitation, anxiety that we create with our own thinking. Bottom line is that not everyone is the same, and right, that fits for everything, diet, even medications, right? Not everybody is the same, and you need to see if having a little bit of coffee helps you feel better or if you feel more irritable and anxious, even with a little bit. Some caffeine is not at all, is not good for some people, and can cause adrenal fatigue. A pot of coffee, even if you don't notice the effects because you have built up a tolerance to caffeine, is having an effect. So if you're drinking a lot of coffee and you say, well, I don't feel it, I'm fine with it, it's still having a negative effect. So when you go beyond a certain amount, it's negative whether you notice it or you don't. Tolerance doesn't mean that it's not having an effect on you. It means that you've developed an addiction and will likely have withdrawal symptoms when you stop. So I really would advise you to not drink a pot of coffee. That is way beyond what is healthy for anybody. And honestly, some people would do best, and many of my purest nutrition guests would say that everyone would do best if caffeine of any sort was completely eliminated from their diet. Some people are especially sensitive to the agitating effects of caffeine. For example, if you have an anxiety disorder of any sort, you would do better if you didn't drink any coffee or caffeinated tea or any other source of caffeine such as soda, which, by the way, we would all do much better without any soda at all, but that's for another discussion. And frankly, I'm often amazed when I have a client who comes to me with frequent anxiety, experiencing frequent anxiety, agitation, and panic attacks. And when I ask them how much coffee they drink, they tell me that they drink at least a pot of coffee every day, plus iced tea and soda throughout the day. And they don't even think about the effect of all of that caffeine and how that may be contributing to their anxiety. And they look shocked when I suggest that they begin to wean themselves off of all caffeine drinks. In fact, for many people, the caffeine may be the root cause of the anxiety and the panic disorder. Let me say that again. Sometimes caffeine may be the root cause of the anxiety disorder or panic disorder, or at the very least, it can be a large contributing factor. So if you're very sensitive to caffeine, even a little bit of coffee can cause a panic attack. If you have a tendency to have anxiety, then eliminating all caffeinated drinks would be recommended. So the other type of people that might do better without drinking coffee are people who have sleep problems. And if you're having difficulty sleeping, you need to look at how much caffeine you're drinking during the day. Caffeine tends to actually stay in the body for several hours after drinking it. So the first thing that you would need to do if you have a sleep problem and you tend to be a coffee drinker is to eliminate all of your afternoon caffeine. So don't drink any caffeinated drinks after 2 p.m. if you're having trouble drinking. And speaking of timing, are you one of those people who need to have a cup of coffee as soon as you wake up in the morning? Is it the first thing that you put into your stomach? I used to do that, and I found that I didn't feel so good when I did that. And in fact, there are several reasons why coffee should not be the first thing that you put into your stomach. I know there may be people out there groaning about that. They like to have their coffee as soon as they get up in the morning. But drinking coffee on an empty stomach is, the empty stomach is probably the worst time to drink coffee. When you drink coffee or caffeinated tea, it will stimulate the production of hydrochloric acid in your stomach. And this production of hydrochloric acid is significantly greater when the coffee is consumed on an empty stomach. And obviously, this will cause irritation to the lining of your stomach and intestines and can actually cause harm over a period of time. Also, drinking coffee first thing in the morning can increase the chance of heartburn or acid reflux. And with regard to those people who have digestive problems, it's probably a good idea to completely eliminate caffeinated drinks, period, because caffeine is a well-known irritant for those people who have IBS, gastritis, Crohn's disease, colitis, and ulcers. And the tendency to produce cortisol, which I talked about earlier, and to feel irritable from coffee will be much more extreme when you drink coffee on an empty stomach. And according to the Ayurvedic specialist, Dr. Claudia Welch, an empty stomach is much more affected by caffeine than one that is full and nourished. So if you're going to enjoy a hot cup of coffee, the best thing to do is drink it after you've already eaten breakfast. And as I've spoken about on a previous show, it's recommended to get your day started to help you with hydration, digestion, and energy and improved mood to drink a cup of warm water with lemon first thing rather than the coffee. And that will actually, believe it or not, boost your energy because it helps with hydration. And I usually start my day with warm water and lemon, then a green juice, then a bowl of steel-cut oatmeal with some nuts and some organic blueberries, which are like nature's little vitamin pills, and then a cup of coffee, and usually half caffeinated, so I don't overdo it all at once. And that's how I can fully enjoy the coffee without all the negative side effects. So give it a try. Try for 1 week. Start your day with warm water and lemon, and then a nutritious breakfast before drinking your coffee. And if you're used to drinking a pot of caffeinated coffee, try to decrease it to 1 to 2 cups, preferably with one half of it being decaf. And try not to drink any caffeine after 2 p.m. if you're having trouble sleeping at night. So try this for a week and see how you feel. Notice if you feel more relaxed, if you're sleeping better, if you're in a better mood, if your stomach feels better, and if you actually have more energy that lasts the day rather than feeling totally wiped out in the afternoon. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break to go have a cup of coffee. No, we're not going to have a cup of coffee. After the break, neurologist, memory specialist, and author of the book, Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask, Dr. Ronald DeVere, who's sitting right here, we'll be discussing the new simple guidelines for evaluating and treating Alzheimer's disease with his glass half full attitude. And we'll be taking your calls, your tweets, your emails with your questions for Dr. DeVere. Give a call toll free at 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or send me a tweet to MARAEK or an email to Dr. Mara at drmaracarpel.com. And we'll be right back.
Super psychologist Dr. Mara Carpel will be back after words from our sponsors.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
If you despise bra shopping in the stores, have a complimentary bra fitting at your home or office. It's so convenient. And with 13 styles, including a no-wire bra and 52 sizes A through H cup, Sonia Das, the bra lady, has the bra that's just right for you. What are you waiting for? Call to schedule your personal fitting today and find out what all the ladies love about essential body wear. Call 512-981-8788 or preview the products at haveaperkyday.com and have a perky day. Gravity.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.
Joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpel on Your Golden Years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmaracarpel.com. And now with me in the studio, neurologist, memory specialist, author of the book Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask, and executive and chairman of the Capital of Texas chapter of the Alzheimer's Association and chairman of the committee to put together the guidelines and treatment of Alzheimer's disease for the Texas Council on Alzheimer's Disease. Dr. Ronald DeVere is here to talk about these new Texas guidelines for the best practice in the diagnosis and treatment of Alzheimer's disease. And again, if you have questions, give a call at toll-free 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or send a tweet to me at M-A-R-A-E-K or an email at drmara@drmaracarpel.com, and I will read your questions over the air. So welcome back, Dr. DeVere.
Thank you, Dr. Carpel. Pleasure to be here today. Thank you.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about this committee before we go into talking about these guidelines?
Well, the Texas State Health Department was interested in putting together some guidelines for Alzheimer's, which is, of course, a condition that's common all over the world. And this was about 4 years ago. And with the number of people, the Texas Council on Alzheimer's is one department of the state. I have to be on that committee. There's also a big research consortium in the state of Texas that people may not know. Six big universities here. Also do research on Alzheimer's and get their money from the legislature. And then there were a lot of volunteers in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So we put all these guidelines together. In fact, we were almost ready to release them in 2011, but then the national guidelines changed and we hadn't looked at the new ones. So we looked at the new national guidelines, international, and then we incorporated that into our guidelines. And then we just finished them at the end of 2013. The international and national guidelines are not very user-friendly, not because they're not important, but because the average person out there in the public, patients, caregivers, it's not easy to follow. It's mostly written for research. So our goal, in addition to doing them for the state, was to make it more user-friendly. And so I have actually the website that everybody can go and get these guidelines on their internet. And I'll read it here. It's the state guideline.
Okay.
It's the www.dfhs.state.tx.us and then a /forward Alzheimer's.
Okay.
I can say that again.
Yes.
So it's www.dfhs.state.tx.us/Alzheimer's
with an S
at the end. And when you go to that website, you'll see other things there, but you look to the right of your page on your internet, you'll see critical best practice diagnosis, treatment of Alzheimer's disease.
Okay.
And we've had some nice feedback. We want everybody in the state of Texas, of course, everywhere else, to understand where they're from and relatively easy to follow when they have a lot of questions. Because a lot of doctors know some of this, but I think it's important that the public understand it.
Mm-hmm. What would be the benefit of people looking that up and understanding these guidelines more clearly?
Well, I think everybody is concerned about their memory and changes in their brain function and emotions. And they may not, you can go certainly to the Alzheimer's Association website, but these incorporate, as I said, everything fairly simple, but that's not the only source, but it is easy to follow how a physician or group of physicians would evaluate and treat somebody with a memory or cognitive disorder. Not everything is Alzheimer's, but takes us through the different things that we need to do in evaluating somebody, and many other conditions turn up beside Alzheimer's.
So what makes up our normal cognitive function?
Well, that's a good question. We all know the answer to that, but we don't think about it. Five areas that we like to think about are, first of all, memory. As we get older, our memory doesn't change very much. We have a little trouble with retrieval. But when your memory starts becoming a problem, that you're noticing it and other people notice it, that's never normal. And that's the time people need to be checked. A second area we call executive function, which is judgment, reasoning, insight. And that doesn't change much as we get older if you're in pretty good health. For example, if you have an IQ score of 100 when you're 40 or 30, it pretty well stays about the same even in the until you reach 80. So that normally for judgment and reasoning are not usually effective. We process things a lot slower as we get older. Instead of 78 RPM, we go down to maybe 68 RPM, but we don't lose the ability to reason and judge. That's impairment that's abnormal. Speech and language, we all have trouble with word finding. Can't complete a sentence. You go to a party, somebody asks you a question, you don't remember, you go home, you wake up 2 o'clock in the morning, aha.
Right, oh yes.
That's the aha moment. And that's normal. But when people have more trouble and they can't get the words in, their sentences become more of a problem, and family members recognize that as well. That's never normal. And again, that doesn't mean Alzheimer's.
Right, right.
And then, of course, in your field, which is personality changes and mood and behavior, and you know more about it than of course, I do, but any change in behavior, whether it's depression, anxiety, inappropriate behavior, and there's no explanation, it's not part of normal aging. And, of course, the last thing, which is important, called visual perception, which is a fancy word, we have normal vision, we assume we have normal vision. For example, if you're driving your car and you're having trouble with direction, that doesn't mean that your memory's impaired. You just don't recognize possibly your area where you're driving. If we all went to Mars now, we'd all have a visual perception problem. We've never been there. So those are the five areas we look for, and it's very important.
Okay. So, you know, in my experience, many people don't know when they have signs that it's time to seek medical attention. Right, for a memory or cognitive changes. So, as you said, sometimes things are not normal. So when would you advise somebody to go seek an evaluation?
Well, as we said, the most two common things that people recognize in other people are changes in memory, which the person may not be aware of,
right,
but other people do, and speech, because those are easily detected. So if a person is just concerned about his memory and he's got other people telling him that the memory is not normal, then they should definitely seek help. And where to go, that's important. It takes 45 minutes, at least 30 to 45 minutes, to evaluate somebody who's complaining of a change in their cognitive function. And nothing against family doctors, but they don't usually spend more than 15 minutes. I think a family doctor's role, if you go to your family doctor and you don't have any complaints, he will say, are you having a memory problem, and then follow up. But if you're already having a memory disorder, you should go to one of three specialists. One would be a geriatrician who spends more time, a neurologist or a geriatric psychiatrist. Those are the three specialties I would recommend if you're already having a problem, as opposed to going to the doctor for just a checkup, and he's going to ask you if you have a memory problem. And mostly because they know a little more, but also they'll spend the time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of time to get this sorted out.
Right, right. So what could people expect when they go for an evaluation of their memory and their cognitive skills?
Well, that's a good question, Mara. The key thing, there are three things that need to be done in an office evaluation for someone with cognitive decline or cognitive symptoms. First
mm-hmm.
of all, as we all learn in medicine, doesn't matter what field you're in, you take a good history and find out what the situation is. Do you have high blood pressure? Do you have heart disease? Do you have a history in the family? Are you taking lots of medicine? The second thing is there's a simple test that most doctors will do in the office, which is and the third and probably the most important piece of information is to be sure there's a caregiver or someone in the family at the visit. So they could go out in the waiting room and
mm-hmm.
fill out a form that tells the doctor what they know about caregiver or the person
mm-hmm.
with the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the end of those three evaluations, we should be able to tell, are you normal for your age? Do you have a mild impairment or do you have a moderate impairment? The mild impairment, we use the word mild cognitive impairment, which may determine memory or thinking, but it's minor, but not normal. And those people that come late to the doctor, they come late to their bridge game, get to pay their bills, but they're perfectly fine alone. But that's not considered normal aging because we don't believe in senility. And then you have the people who are more advanced, and we call those dementia, which, as most people should know, it's not the name of the disease. It's a category.
Mm-hmm.
And those people are impaired enough that they usually can't live by themselves. So that's where we go. Now, if we can't sort it out by the end of those three pieces of information, we knock on the door of a neuropsychologist who does cognitive testing,
mm-hmm.
and that's the old IQ test, and he could help us by telling us what the person doing, what kind of score they getting compared to your age, education, and gender.
Mm-hmm.
So then
mm-hmm.
we have more information on where we stand, never mind the cause. We haven't got to the cause yet.
Right.
Just determine where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes time, and that's very important. That's very crucial.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what are some of the common conditions that cause cognitive impairment?
Well, certainly the most common things we don't always think of is a lot of emotional factors, which you deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Depression and anxiety can lead to memory loss because you're not focusing. Medications that you're taking, either over the counter, how many people are taking Benadryl to sleep, Ambien, Sonata,
mm-hmm.
even medicines for anxiety, even medicines for blood pressure can affect it. So it's up to the doctor to know which ones those are.
Right.
Strokes that you clearly have, or if you have high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, if you smoke, your risk of stroke, even if you don't have one, is pretty high. And when you do an ordinary x-ray, you'll find little strokes in the brain.
You've been having them and you just didn't know it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
What they
mm-hmm.
do is you have multiple areas where there's impairment of electrical impulses in the brain because it's like having a bunch of roadblocks in your highway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's picked up on that. Sleep disorders. I would say 70% of people in my practice who I talk to, they snore. They have kicking and crashing movements in the night. Of course, you don't ask the patient that because they don't know. You have to ask somebody else. And then they sleep extra the day. And sleep disorders untreated affects your memory, increases blood pressure. It also causes more heart disease. And there's so many people that have it that don't recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's a lot of other things. Alcohol. You were talking about coffee before. If you drink more than 10 ounces of wine a day,
mm-hmm.
or 2 beers, or 2 ounces of hard liquor, you're going to increase your risk of cognitive decline.
Hmm.
And memory is one of the things that does that. Of course, if you do drugs and other things that are not, you know, abuses of other medicines, they'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, there's a whole of thyroid deficiency, vitamin deficiency. There's a whole list, if you look at
right.
even the guidelines. And so the glass, as we said, is not empty. It's half full. There are other things to consider besides Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm. Right. Memory is very sensitive.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
It is. And we have a tendency a lot in our society to joke about it, but we just have to realize a lot of people that have a memory disorder are not aware of it. 90% of people that come to my office, I ask them why they're there. They say, oh, my husband sent me here, my daughter, and I don't see it. And of course, nine out of 10 times, they do have it. And
right.
It's not that they're denying it. Their life's different. They're not out working and punching the clock. You know, it's not important. You know what day it is? Nah, I never know. I don't really care. Meanwhile, they read the paper every day and all that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see it. And it's not a denial.
Right. Okay. So what if somebody goes through all sorts of tests and the results come back as normal or nonspecific?
Right. Well, that's a good point. Well, just again to reiterate, the main test that we should run on every person with a cognitive disorder is an X-ray of the brain, MRI preferred, but if you have metal in your body, a pacemaker, you have to have a CAT scan. Looking there for strokes, blood clots, you're not going to see Alzheimer's necessarily on an MRI. That's not why we do it.
Okay.
But you should have, again, a neuropsychological testing if we're not sure what level your brain is functioning. And then we do a series of, the doctor normally does a metabolic profile, which is glucose and sodium and potassium and CBC, but we order in our business B12, folic acid, methylmalonic acid, homocysteine, and vitamin D. Homocysteine is a product that is not good to have in your blood. It's a breakdown product of metabolism, and it increases stroke risk and also has been shown to increase Alzheimer's. And those are very easily treated with medication.
Mm-hmm.
So if all your tests are negative and are nonspecific, then we still don't know. Then we have to move on to some more tests. And particularly the tests that we're looking at are more diagnostic for Alzheimer's or Lewy body dementia or others. And we do a PET scan.
Mm-hmm.
A PET scan is not a scan of the PET, but it is a glucose-tagged radioactive substance. Doesn't hurt. They inject it in your vein, and they want to see how your brain picks up sugar.
Hmm.
Normal brain picks up lots of glucose. People with deficient parts of the brain that are not working, as in Alzheimer's or frontal dementia, those areas that are very selective do not pick up glucose. And so they look at a pattern. People that have impaired uptake in the parietal and temporal area, very suggestive with the clinical picture of Alzheimer's disease. Is it 100%? No, probably 90+.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the frontal area of the brain that isn't picked up, then you pick up frontal dementia. So, and then if we're not sure on that, we're doing spinal taps and looking at spinal fluid for breakdown products.
Mm-hmm.
Amyloid, which everybody should know is in the brain, it's very high in Alzheimer's disease and others. And with the spinal fluid analysis, we can determine on what's normal and what's not if you have more likely Alzheimer's than frontal. And we do those in everybody, but it is helpful. And finally, there's a test now. Unfortunately, it's not out there because it's too expensive. It's called an amyloid scan. And so if we can measure how much amyloid is in your brain, which is a benign test, we can determine, for example, if you have Alzheimer's or if you have frontal dementia, because frontal dementia doesn't have amyloid in the brain. Unfortunately, cost prohibitive right now. But there's no reason why every person who goes to see a doctor, by the time they're finished, or even second opinion, they should have a diagnosis, not just dementia. Dementia doesn't tell us the cause.
Right.
And you could be in the 90 to 95% probability based on those tests, your history, and help of others. And that's the key, because treatment is not a cure, but still very important to know what you're dealing with.
Right. Well, the treatment would be different depending on what you're dealing with, right?
Exactly.
So, and some of those causes that you mentioned are actually reversible.
Yes.
So,
or if not reversible. Their prognosis may be more stable, or they, mm-hmm. they get better, but they don't always go back to normal.
Right, but it knowing what it is and giving the proper treatment will help that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, but what about treatment for people who actually have Alzheimer's or some of these other types of dementias?
Yes. The treatment that I would suggest for everybody, even if you don't have the problem, but particularly anybody, even if it's just a memory disorder or dementia, or the problem mm-hmm. is nonspecific, 120 minutes of aerobic exercise,
mm-hmm.
very important. Keeps the brain working and cardiovascular.
120 minutes per
week.
Per week.
Yeah,
okay.
No, not a day.
Okay.
And I find the best equipment to use would be an exercise bike, because you don't have to go out in the 200 degrees heat, and you don't want an older person going on a treadmill.
Right.
The other thing is keep the brain working. Reading, bingo, arts and crafts, take courses, do something. You spend more than 2 hours a day in front of the TV, I consider that brain rot, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, there's some evidence that you were talking about in a Mediterranean diet, for example, which really focuses on olive oil and polyunsaturated fatty acids, walnuts, that kind of thing. But there's other modification diets.
Mm-hmm.
There's evidence that that helps the brain. And then, of course, fish oil may be of value, which is the same,
okay.
really. And then consideration here. Let me see. I think those are. Oh, we also have therapists who are speech therapists who do cognitive therapy. So, for example, if you have a memory disorder or even early dementia, the speech therapist will give you strategies and tricks to help your brain.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people use Lumosity. That's
uh-huh.
a great program on the internet. So those are what we would do for everybody. It doesn't matter whether you have Alzheimer's or you just have a memory loss. They all work at helping people.
Right.
And then the pharmacological side, which is specific medicine, there is no specific treatment for mild cognitive impairment because we don't use the Alzheimer's drugs for that. But we use a drug called Viacog, V-A-Y-A-C-O-G, which is a prescription of Vitamin. And it has a product that seems to help mild cognitive impairment. When you get to the dementias, whether it's Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or stroke, you use one of the three pills that people know. You have Aricept that's been on the market, Exelon, Razadyne. You only use one of those in the mild stages. When the disease gets more advanced in the moderate, we add Namenda, which is a second product. And those only work in the degenerative dementias, as I said, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, but
mm-hmm.
not in the frontal. Frontal is the only one.
Okay, okay. What did you think about what I said about coffee and dementia?
No, that's good. I think there's no evidence coffee helps dementia. There's some evidence that may be a reduction in risk factors
okay.
That are definitely important.
Mm-hmm.
Two suggested reducing risk factors are if you have a reason to go to school, if you want to leave it at high school, people who have more education have a reduced risk of getting these diseases, but more importantly, their reserve of cognitive reserve is much better than people who are not.
Hmm.
So that's a good reason, maybe. Also, repeated head injuries,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in a sport or another reason, increases your risk of
okay,
dementia.
So protect your head.
Protect your head.
Definitely helmets.
Helmets or anything you could use.
Okay. All right.
And the rest, I think, again, they could contact the Alzheimer's Association if they have questions, but also look at the guidelines. If they're not sure about them, you know, feel free to call. I'll be happy to talk.
Okay. So, you know, you always have such a glass half full attitude. What can you say to people out there about having a glass half full attitude about Alzheimer's?
Well, the fear of Alzheimer's is epidemic. And I get people that just come in, that's all they want to know. They don't realize there's all so many other things that can affect your memory.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear the advertising that if you have Alzheimer's, it gets worse, there's no treatment, and you die, I mean, you can't get very positive.
No.
Even the people who are treated with Alzheimer's, if they're early, we could slow decline 2 or 3 or 4 years,
mm-hmm.
which is also positive. It's not a cure. But again, 60% of people who come to the doctor for memory don't have, or 40% don't have
Alzheimer's. Yeah,
right.
And certainly what I have seen in my experience is that people are, their dementia is called Alzheimer's even if it's not.
Right.
Right?
I think that is very good. And that's a lot because we're not getting complete evaluation.
Right.
If you don't know the cause, you call it dementia of undetermined cause.
Right.
Don't just label it.
And I've seen a lot of people have the diagnosis of Alzheimer's and they did not go through all of these tests.
Exactly.
So how do you know it's Alzheimer's?
Well, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's one of my thinking now. Are you sure that you have Alzheimer's? Ask the person. The problem is we're not belittling Alzheimer's. It's common. But the point is, if you dwell on that itself, then you're not going to catch other possible treatable diseases.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. And for example, I have people with sleep disorders who have dementia and Alzheimer's, and you treat the sleep disorders, they go from mild dementia to mild cognitive impairment. They go actually the other way.
Right, so they didn't have Alzheimer's.
Well, they may have had it on
okay.
the testing, but their brain got a little bit better when they
mm-hmm.
went through the sleep study and they were treated.
Interesting.
Myra, it's well known that people have died in their brains of science, and they had tons of Alzheimer's, and they never had the symptoms. So having the brain changes doesn't necessarily say you're going to have the symptoms.
Huh.
But that's not surprising because, why, you know, we don't always get everything that's in our pathology.
Right.
Maybe they were cognitively better. They had less risk factors. They did exercise. Maybe they took cod liver oil.
I don't know.
But you know what I'm saying?
But their brains actually looked
yes.
like an Alzheimer's patient?
Well, exactly. They had all the moderate to severe, and the person historically before death didn't have.
That's something I did not know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, remember, they don't do a lot of autopsies nowadays like they used to.
Right,
but
right.
back in the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
My grandmother had Alzheimer's, and it was in the 80s. So after she died, back then they didn't have the same type of testing that they do now. And the only way that they could determine if it was Alzheimer's was after death by doing an autopsy.
Well, right now they still say that because you're not 100%. But I believe if you're 90% at 90% accurate or 95, that's pretty good.
Right.
Now,
right.
if you're 90 years old, I'm not going to put you through spinal taps and do a lot of extra tests if it fits. You got most people with stroke dementia, by the way, who don't have any strokes. A lot of them are also in the process of Alzheimer's. It's a double whammy.
Right, right. Okay. Well, we're going to take a brief break. Don't leave because
no.
we have more time, and maybe after the break you can talk a little bit about the guidelines. All right. Go for a cup of coffee. So we're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere, and this will give listeners a time to call with questions or send their questions via email. Give a call at 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or tweet me at MARAEK or send me an email to Dr. Mara at drmaracarpell.com, and I will read your questions over the air. So be right back.
Super Psychologist Dr. Mara Carpell will be back after words from our sponsors.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-24-
If you despise bra shopping in the stores, have a complimentary bra fitting at your home or office. It's so convenient, And with 13 styles, including a no-wire bra and 52 sizes A through H cup, Sonia Das, the bra lady, has the bra that's just right for you. What are you waiting for? Call to schedule your personal fitting today and find out what all the ladies love about Essential Body Wear. Call 512-981-8788 or preview the products at haveaperkyday.com. And have a perky day. Gravity.
Okay, and we are back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And I'm speaking with neurologist and memory specialist, Dr. Ronald DeVere, who is talking about the new Texas guidelines for diagnosis and treatment.
I almost spoke all the words that I wanted to say.
Okay, we're back. And I'm here with Dr. Ronald DeVere, memory specialist and chairman of the committee that came up with the new guidelines in Texas for Alzheimer's diagnosis and treatment. Sorry about the break there. We are now back. And I was asking you about these new guidelines, Dr. DeVere.
Yes, well, as hopefully everybody heard the last 20 minutes, I went over them. Once again, I want to give people the website to go on that's on the state internet. And this is www.dshs.state.tx.us/Alzheimer's. I'll say it again, www.dshs.state.tx.us/Alzheimer's.
Okay, and I'll be posting that on my website as
okay,
well later
great.
Tonight, and that's for the new guidelines, so anybody can read those guidelines.
Yes, they're open for everybody to read, doctors, general public, made for the state of Texas, but it's also for anywhere who wants to read it
because
it is user-friendly.
Great.
The other thing that I was going to mention that I didn't talk to is that at the end is an Alzheimer's patient, or never mind Alzheimer's, just dementia patient, two things are very important. Throughout the city and wherever your chapter is, there are respite groups, which are groups where you can take your loved one and they may be in a church or they may be in a synagogue, they could be in a community center, and they have pet therapy, music, arts and crafts, bingo. In New York, they take a lot of their cognitive impaired patients to the art museum, because people with dementia, they still can function in many other ways. Ask a Parkinson patient who barely moves, you get him on the dance floor, he's wild. It's like
okay.
A rock and roll. So people have tremendous amount of other things. Unless you challenge those things, you're not going to see it. The other important thing, as I didn't mention about caregivers, people who are taking care of loved ones with dementia, is I have sort of a comment. The most common cause of an agitated patient is actually the caregiver. And I'm not saying that negatively. Caregivers love their loved ones and their family, but we have a tendency to correct people with the memory and cognitive impairment. And when you do that, the person gets very frustrated. I get this call all the time from a assisted living when the nurse calls me up and says, Dr. DeVere, Mrs. Jones is getting mad. She's kicking and she's thrashing. So I asked the nurse, I said, well, tell me what's going on. Well, I went into the room. She's supposed to take a bath and all that. And she started hitting me. I said, well, I'm going to give you Valium, not the nurse. because the nurse has to have a little more understanding that you don't push the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are other ways to get a bat. You know, you can get a fan.
Right, right.
So the same thing happens at home. And it's not because you don't care. And so that's what the caregiver support groups are good for. You get to talk to your colleagues, other friends. As you know, Dr. Carpell, that's your field. Is that you get other ideas, you have a leader. And I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah.
I very rarely prescribe medicines for behavior problems. And as you know, a lot of people know that the antipsychotic drugs have got a bad press for a long time. The FDA has now put a black box on them. We don't use them unless we absolutely need them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that doctors have to know that. You know, it's easy for a nurse to say, I got this very difficult patient. Could you give me a medicine? And so what I usually tell them is, no. Then I'm joking. I mean, treat the patient. The nurse, but I usually monitor it and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important.
Yeah, you know, I actually used to give seminars about how to give a bath to somebody who has Alzheimer's, because that's a real common issue, and you don't want to give medication so that somebody is more compliant with a bath.
Right.
You know, medications can be dangerous.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You end up treating the nursing staff because they're busy.
Right.
And then you're not treating the patient.
Right, exactly.
So that's, in my opinion, that's crucial in long-term care of people, whether it's at home or
having training.
Yes.
In dealing with those behavioral
yes.
issues.
Yes.
Very important.
Yes.
I did receive a question online asking how young can somebody be and still have Alzheimer's?
Well, that also gives us the cause. The question is, how young can you have a problem, period? And I see people with memory disorders of all ages, 30, 25, 40. But when you're talking about dementia of the Alzheimer's type, in the 40s, but those are genetic and they're very uncommon, less than 1%. But I've seen a number of people in their mid-40s and 50s, which is very unusual, but most common is 65 and 70 and older.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the point. Can't keep our guard down, and somebody diagnoses somebody who's having Alzheimer's at 45, I would have to question that only because it's such an uncommon disease at that age group.
Mm-hmm.
But I still wouldn't, if that was what it turned out to be, fine.
Right, you can't rule it out.
No, you can't rule it out. But it's not number one on the list by any stretch.
So if somebody's having a memory impairment at the age of 45, you would be more likely to think that it's something other than Alzheimer's.
Yeah, as I said, again, I'm speaking in general, drugs, alcohol, sleep disorder, vitamin deficiency, multiple head injuries. Alzheimer's would not be on top of the list. You stop thinking about everything else. That's what happens.
Right.
I believe if you find one person that has a B12 deficiency, I'm not here to talk about cost-benefit, you've done tremendous.
That's treatable.
Absolutely.
And is it very common at 65 to have Alzheimer's? That still seems a little young to me.
Well, no. I think we do see it. Again, Alzheimer's is not always by itself. You get a lot of silent strokes that we said, high blood pressure, diabetes, and heart disease. That's another thing I tell people. If you have those conditions, you must treat them aggressively. You take your own blood pressure once a week at home. If you go to your doctor three times a year, what about the other 360 days? If your cholesterol bleeds, take your medicine. If you hear somebody say, oh, I got memory loss on Lipitor, I would not believe them. It's rare to statin to do it. And again, diabetes, very important, because diabetes causes small strokes. It also causes cognitive decline. And what happens when you have a memory disorder, you don't usually control your diabetes very well anyway, particularly if you're insulin. And then smoking, I'm not here to talk about it, but never mind lung disease, it increases stroke risk significantly.
Right. But when somebody has a stroke, it's not Alzheimer's that they get, right? It's more vascular.
If you have a definite stroke, one stroke, you know, one swallow doesn't make a summer.
Right.
Most strokes get better and you sit tight.
Mm-hmm.
As if you start getting worse after that, there has to be other reasons.
Uh-huh.
It could be another stroke.
Multiple.
It could be developed into Alzheimer's, or you could have a sleep disorder.
Right, right. So it's not automatically Alzheimer's then either.
No,
right,
that's correct.
Right. Right, and there are different types of dementias and different causes, as you've talked about.
And if you go to your doctor's office and you have a list of causes, the common ones that I think the public needs to know, so they're better prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Their fear, because not all the doctors are, not all of us are perfect in what we do.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. It's interesting because, you know, like I said, I evaluate veterans for PTSD, and one of the questions that I ask has to do with memory. How's your memory? And is it mostly for short-term, you know, events, or is it both long-term and short-term that you forget things? And I've had veterans who are about 35 who say, well, yeah, I'm having some memory problems, but I figured it was age. And I'm like, at 35?
Right.
No, it's not age. But what I said, but I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that you have Alzheimer's either at 35. And the reason that I ask the question is because memory is very sensitive to anxiety, to depression, and to sleep impairment, like you just said. And those are all symptoms of PTSD or other conditions from, you know, emotional conditions. So if somebody is very anxious, their memory is probably not very good because they're not focused at all on anything. The information is not processing. It's not getting into the memory banks in the brain.
Exactly. It doesn't get through the front door.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the veterans are unique people because not only do they have the stress of their deployment, but they have multiple blast injuries.
Yes.
They also have, some of them get into some alcohol.
Right. Things
when they get home. So not a surprise.
Right.
But you want to help them.
Right. There's also, you know, then I'll also, if they talk about how their memory is really impaired, then I'll ask them if it's not already documented, if they were ever hit in the head while they were in the service, or were they... create...
Well, like you, I think you told me you're seeing a number of veterans with PTSD. I've been seeing a number of them for blast injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Where they've had exposure. I mean, these are just incredible. The amount of, you have a small amount of memory loss, I'm not surprised.
Right. So we're going to take a break. Thank you so much, Dr. DeVere, for coming in this evening and coming in person. Before we go, though, what I'd like to do is let listeners know not only that website, but how they can contact you if they're interested in making an appointment with you at your clinic,
sure.
Your memory clinic. You have a memory clinic, right?
Yeah, we run a memory disorders clinic. It's in Lakeway, and we take Medicare.
Your book, which is a great book. I do recommend it for everybody. Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask.
Yes.
Great title.
Well,
great book.
It's on Amazon, and I think it's about $15 or $16. It also can be sold in my office if you come by. My office number is 512-261-7909, and I'm in Lakeway, 1200 Lakeway Drive. Just have myself and my office manager there. We're happy to see you. Or if you have questions, you can just call. You don't have to come and see me.
Do you have an email address or a website?
Yeah. My email is rdevere, D-E-V-E-R-E, at austin.rr.com.
Okay.
And we have a website also. I have my own memory problem. I'll have to think. I don't.
Okay. Well, I'm going to find it and I'm going to put it on my website.
It's a catchy problem.
I'm going to put it on my website later tonight.
Okay.
Okay.
Super.
So, all right. So thank you again so much. I'd love to have you come back on at another time in the future.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And have a very good night.
Thank you.
So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about making assumptions and how your thinking affects relationships. And then the Jazzmanian Devil, Tomas Ramirez, joins us, and we'll be playing some of his original music. So come right back.
Super psychologist Dr. Mara Karpel. We'll be back after words from our sponsors.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240. Please visit us on the web at www.drmarakarpel.com.
If you despise bra shopping in the stores, have a complimentary bra fitting at your home or office. It's so convenient. And with 13 styles, including a no-wire bra and 52 sizes A through H cup, Sonia Das, the bra lady, has the bra that's just right for you. What are you waiting for? Call to schedule your personal fitting today and find out what all the ladies love about Essential Bodywear. Call 512-981-8788 or preview the products at haveaperkyday.com and have a perky day. Gravity.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.
You almost felt all the things that I dream about, and you almost heard all the songs that I sing out loud. But almost doesn't count anymore, and a sure thing never will. So many things are so trivial to me when I see all the world around me. And at times I forget the simplicity of it all. Of it all.
And we are back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And before we speak with Tomas Ramirez, who'll be joining us in a while, the Jasmanian Devil, I'm going to talk a little bit. I know a couple of weeks ago I talked about how changing your thoughts can change how you feel. And so I want to follow that up with just a little while of talking about how changing your thoughts can also change your relationships. And making assumptions and the effect that that has on your relationship. So I recently had an experience of having someone jump to conclusions and make some very extreme negative and false assumptions about me based on one comment that I made about something that happened in the news. And this kind of thing actually happens very frequently. We are all constantly making assumptions about people and about situations, and it's frequent that people make assumptions about me and about you that are likely not true and are usually negative in nature, because people, when they make assumptions, tend to make assumptions on the negative side. That's just the way people are. And this particular incident stands out in my mind because this person let me know what their assumptions were about me. While most people don't usually verbally express their assumptions, at least not in quite the extreme poisonous way that this person did. And in some ways it was a gift to hear what that person believed so that I could see how extreme people can go in creating a story about another person that is completely false, right? Because here's a situation where now I knew was totally false because it was about me and about my thoughts and beliefs. So it was a good way of testing that out. And I was able to hear from another person what they actually believed I was thinking and feeling. So in a scientific way and as a researcher, that was a good experience, but it wasn't a good experience in terms of how it felt, and it can be very damaging to relationships, and I'm still waiting to see the outcome of this interaction and the impact that this type of assumption and the interaction based on that assumption will have on the relationship, the friendship that I have with that person's spouse. That person's spouse was my... If it happened to you that someone has voiced their false assumptions about you for you to hear, how did you feel? I know my own reaction was to feel, first off, completely misunderstood, that how could this person take what I said and get that conclusion from it, that they really don't understand how I feel and how I think. And then I felt angry that such an extreme falsehood about myself was being stated. And it felt like I was being slandered. And I guess I was. I mean, that is slander. So if this has happened to you, how did it affect your relationship with that person? Making assumptions is one of the top ways of destroying a relationship. And the best-selling author, the internationally known speaker, and a previous guest to my show, Don Miguel Ruiz, talks about making assumptions in his book, The Four Agreements. And in fact, don't make assumptions is the third agreement of his four agreements. As Don Miguel Ruiz states in his book, the problem with making assumptions is that we believe they are the truth. We invent a whole story that's only truth for us, but we believe it. And one assumption leads to another assumption. We jump to conclusions, and we take our story very personally. Then we blame others and react by sending emotional poison with our word, And we even assume that we are right about something to the point that we will destroy relationships in order to defend our position. So that's pretty extreme, but it happens every day, so much so that he made it one of the four agreements to improve your life. You know, we live in a fast food society. Assumptions are like fast food. They're easy and they're ready to go. It's easy to make assumptions. It's a quick way of dealing with another person. But just like fast food, they're unhealthy. And over the long run, they're very destructive to our lives and to our relationships. So not only do they destroy our relationships, but they make us feel really bad ourselves when we make an assumption. So if somebody has a sad or maybe angry look on their face when they're talking to us and we jump to the conclusion and make the assumption that they're angry or discontent with us, we make an assumption, then we also feel bad. Not only do we have a negative effect on that relationship, but we need to be angry at them, but we also feel bad. So it can be poison, but it's very easy to do, and we do it all the time. We take a piece of information, we wrap our own previous experiences around it, and we have the answer about what that person is all about, what they think and what they desire and what their motivations are. We don't even take the time to ask anything. We draw a conclusion, and then we're on our way. So have you noticed yourself doing that, jumping to conclusions about people? Just like fast food, making assumptions is unhealthy and dangerous. And assumptions will eat away at our relationships, and they eat away at our state of mind, the way that fast foods eat away at our organs and even fog our brain. Most of the time, though, we're not even aware that we're making assumptions. Usually, our assumptions are based on our own distorted filters when viewing another person's behaviors or hearing their words. And these filters are created up by our own beliefs, from the beliefs that maybe are not true, beliefs that people taught us that weren't really true. And they're also based on our past experiences. You know, the present is not a representation of the past. Those experiences are in the past. And those filters are created by things we've been taught, things we hear on television, in commercials, and that we assume to be true. So in order to stop destroying our relationships with false thinking, Don Miguel Ruiz advises, find the courage to ask questions. Communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstanding, sadness, and drama. With just this one agreement, you can completely transform your life. So ask questions. Don't jump to conclusions. And he goes on to say, once you recover all the energy that you invested in making assumptions, you can use that energy to create a new dream, your personal heaven. So I want to give you all an assignment in the next few days. Notice when you are jumping to conclusions about another person or about a situation. Notice when you are making an assumption based on very little information. Just become more mindful of it. You don't have to do anything to change it. Just notice it. Because noticing when you do that, when you're ready, is to ask questions. When you don't have a lot of information, before you jump to a conclusion, ask a question. Find out what is that person really thinking? What are they really feeling? Beyond maybe that first comment that they might have made, or how their look on their face, or how they dress, or how they act, how they walk. Ask a question. But first, become mindful. Becoming mindful of your own tendency to jump to conclusions is probably the most powerful tool that you can use in order to protect your relationships and to protect your own well-being. So on that note, with joining us on the phone to talk about his latest musical projects, a bit about his musical history, and we'll hear more of his music. So come right back.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmaricarpell.com. Thank you.
we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And you were just listening to the Jasmanian Devil, Tomas Ramirez, who is now joining us from Fremont, Texas, to talk about what he's been up to since the last time he was on the show, what projects he's currently working on. Good evening, Tomas.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay. I want to remind you there's a slight delay when we talk to us this way, aside from also some possible sunspots that are some or gremlins that have gotten into the internet.
Okay, I'll do my best then.
Okay. So, Tomas, we were just listening to Exodus Mexodus.
Oh, that's what it was. I was wondering what it was. I was listening to it going, hey, that sounds very, very familiar. And Exodus, I wrote that while I was living in McDonough.
Okay. So what is that song about?
Well, actually, the rhythm track was written on a program called Acid, Acid Pro, as a matter of fact. And then a friend of mine got together another program called Pro Tools, and I put saxophone on top of a digital rhythm section, pretty much where it is. And as I was writing it, now it's the kids, but at the time there was just tons of Latin Americans coming across the border. And everybody was getting all crazy about it. And so that was on my mind, hence the title.
Okay. It seems very timely.
Yeah, you can count on me for that, right?
Tomas, for those listeners who haven't heard of you, I can't believe that people haven't heard of you, but maybe you can let them know a little bit about your musical history.
Oh, gosh. Started in 1970 when I went to moved to Austin, Texas, and started playing with the University of Texas Jazz Ensemble. And from that gig, I got a job with a guy named Jerry Jeff Walker, who was more or less like he was a troubadour, but he got together a rock and roll band and wanted a sax player for some reason. Actually, he wanted a horn section, but the horn section didn't last, and I'm the only one that remained, so I toured with him for about 6 years. And then from that gig, I played with Christopher Cross some on his first album. And from that gig, I started playing with, all kinds of recording artists at the time, probably people who probably haven't heard of them, since. Carole King, everybody's heard of Carole King. I did about 2 or 3 albums with Carole King. And then after that, I sort of went off on my own and started a band called the Jasmanian Devil. That was back in the mid-70s. I've been doing that pretty much. I worked with just about every band in Austin at one time or another. And I've been doing my own thing since, I'd say since about 1980.
Wow.
With Jerry Jeff, we went to Australia, we went to Canada. He wouldn't go anywhere where they wouldn't speak English. He had this thing about saying, we can't go. We had offers to go everywhere. At the time, they wanted to take us off to Russia, and he didn't want to go to Russia. They wanted to go to China, and he didn't want to go to China. So he was even kind of skeptical about going to Canada. Everybody reassured him that he would be understood, and he would understand everybody else in Canada. And then with other bands, the Dan Del Santo band, which was sort of like a world beat band, and then the Tejana Dames, which is a Texas root music band. I travel all throughout Europe and And then there was a band that was conglomeration of Austrian musicians that in the late 80s, we went to Russia while it was still communist Russia.
Huh.
Matter of fact, about 2 years after we went there, it became democratic. It became a democracy. And I have to think that I helped.
Okay. Okay.
As of late, what I've been doing as of late, I've been doing a lot of, like I said, you just heard that Exodus and Exodus. It's kind of like what I've been doing. I've been taking a lot of digital rhythm tracks that I've been writing and then transfer them over to Pro Tools and I'm saying another program called Ableton Live and putting live saxophone and saxophone sections and getting guitar guys to come over and lay down solo, blah, 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 blah. And that's pretty much the direction I've been going in as of late. As a matter of fact, I'm going to Austin tomorrow to do some recording with a friend of mine, Art Mendoza. He's doing a one-man play, and he's going to do it where all the music is pre-recorded, and then he will act on top of it. So that's what we're going to be doing for the next week or so.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. And that's Bart Mendoza, the producer of this show.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of funny how that worked out.
What's that?
I said, that's funny how that worked out.
Yeah, funny. I think the last time we spoke, you were in Atlanta.
Yeah, well, I moved back to Texas about 7 months ago, January. I'm back in Fremont, Texas. My folks are becoming aged. They're past the golden years, my dear. They need help, so I'm back here. Trying to take care of them, make sure that mostly I'm mowing the lawn a lot is what I'm doing. It's been raining as of late, and if it doesn't rain, it's miserable. If it does rain, it's miserable. If it rains, I have to do a lot of work, and when it's not raining, it's a dust bowl down here. So yeah, either way, there's a lot of work involved. But I travel down to the valley. I travel, and the valley, for those who don't know, is the Rio Grande Valley, down in South Texas, Brownsville, McAllen area. And then I also go up to Austin, once a month or so, to do some gigs there.
To perform. So that's what you've been doing. You've been traveling in either direction to perform.
Right. Either north or south.
Mm-hmm. Have you been recording? I know you're recording this week. Have you been recording recently?
No, not recently. Actually, when I was in McDonough, I recorded my own stuff, and I got like about 20 songs that are still in the can. I need to, at some particular point, I'm going to get back to it and then do some mixing and then do some mastering. But at this particular point, everything's on hold just so I can deal with my parents.
Right. There's a time and a place, right?
Right, exactly. I've done so much music, work on music for the last 10 years or so. It's been pretty intensive. So it's time to take a break for a little bit, and see to the immediate family, see what's going on. And, it's still there. I mean, it's there. I just need to take care of this. And as it resolves, I will go back to doing my music again.
So you have done a lot of recordings up until this point, and in fact, we're going to play one of your other recordings right now called La Panicula.
Oh yeah, okay.
Can you talk a little bit about it before we start playing it?
Well, once again, it was a Acid Pro rhythm thing that I wrote, and as I was listening to it, I said, I wrote sort of like a poem, which are the words to it, which the Dracanicula means the dog days. It's about the hottest part of summer, and basically what I'm saying is, it's in Spanish, so those who don't speak Spanish, it's just a story of being down here in South Texas when the heat is just intense. You know, it's like 100 degrees every day with 90% humidity, which is
like today.
It's a form of hell, is all I can say. And I'm describing as a kid, talking about this as a kid, when I used to come down here in the summer, my parents would come by, and they'd go off and take extravagant vacations and drop me off with my grandmother, and it was just a description of being in South Texas in the heat, in the hottest part of summer.
And this particular song is used in Art Mendoza's trailer for his one-man show, right?
Right. Yeah, it's sort of like with the background music. It'll be the soundtrack for the intro to his play.
Right. Okay. So now here we go. Tomas Ramirez, La Panicula.
Eres la canícula. Y el calor estaba desgraciado. De la piel de mamacate. Goteaba el sudor. Abanicos. No, hombre, ni lo pienses, cabrón. Era una vida de pobres y de pobrecitos. Mi abuelita me decía, mira, mijo, aguántalo, aguántalo. Y lo aguanté. ¿Y sabes por qué? Porque era una vida de pobres y de pobrecitos, una vida de pues pobres y de pobrecitos. Thank you.
Well, there you go.
Tomas Ramirez, the Jasmanian Devil, has a great song.
Thanks.
You could feel the pain of the heat.
Yes, I can feel it right now, as a matter of fact.
So if listeners want to hear more of your music, if they want to listen to it on CDs or come and see you in person performing, do you have a place where they can go to find out
that information? If you're in the Valley area, if you live down in the Rio Grande Valley, about once a month, about the second Thursday of every month, I play at a place called the Half Moon in Brownsville, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I play with my band, and then as a rule, I play on Thursday, then the next night I play in a blues band called Los Bluesanos at the same place. And if you're in the Austin area, once a month, and it depends, it varies, I play at a jazz bar, nothing called the Elephant Bar.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if you're in Austin, well, once a month, you know, check out the Austin Chronicle and see if I'm playing, where I'm playing, when I'm playing there. And the second Thursday of most months, I'm down in the Valley.
Second Thursday of every month?
Yeah, it's been like that for about 5 months now. So we kind of keep it, you know, consistent with the second Thursday so everybody can get the idea that on the second Thursday of the month, I'll be down there. But as far as Austin is concerned, I'm trying to get more gigs up in Austin. I've been since the last place I lived before Atlanta was down in the Valley, I have more connections there. They're still the same people living in Austin. Austin is such a changing scene, it's a volatile scene, clubs come and go. So it's a place where I have to be involved with more to figure out who's doing what and where. The Valley is a slower paced scene, and when somebody starts a club, it usually lasts a few years. And Austin, it can be a matter of months before that guy's come and gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So how can people contact you or find your music? You know, do you have a website that they could go to?
Well, I used to. I don't know if they're still there or not. The record company used to have a website for me. But they do have, it's called INIO Records, I-N-I-O Records. And INIORecords.com is where you can go to, and they have a virtual music store there. And also, CD Baby has it in iTunes.
And iTunes.
Just put in Tomas Ramirez and then search, and then they'll find them. And I believe there's three albums for sale from my Neo Records on both CD Baby and iTunes.
Okay. I went through Amazon on my Kindle, and mm-hmm. I got one of the records.
Oh, good. There's another question.
Yep. So is your website, Tomas Ramirez Music, still active?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Is your website, Tomas Ramirez Music.com, still active?
I don't know. That was the one that was, I believe it is. I haven't, when I said it, I live out in the middle of nowhere, and I don't have, all I have is an iPhone. And I don't have any internet service out here, so I haven't checked things out. I should. I need to go down to the public library and pre-month.
So that wouldn't have a calendar of where you're playing because you're not keeping up with that. So people really need to check out the Half Moon in Brownsville or the Elephant Room in Austin and look at the Austin Chronicle.
Right, exactly, and also I keep everybody aware of what's going on Facebook too.
Facebook,
Tomas Ramirez Facebook, and as a rule, whenever gigs are coming and going, I let everybody know.
Then I'll post that link on my website later, so people can check it out.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Well, Tomas, it was a pleasure. I would love to have you back on the show in the near future so you could fill us in on more of what you've been doing.
Absolutely.
And I'll see you tomorrow here in Austin.
Yes, you will. I'll probably be leaving here at the crest of dawn, and you'll see me 3.5 hours later.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. I'm looking forward to it. Well, you have a good evening. Stay cool.
I will. I'll try. I'm going to go back inside. I'm outside underneath the oak tree, because that's the best reception I can get on this cell phone. But, as soon as this thing's over, I'm heading inside.
All right. Get inside. Get into that air conditioning. Have a good evening. Careful driving.
You too. Love y'all, and I'll see y'all later.
All right. Okay. So we are at the end of another show already, and I want to let you know about what's coming up next week. Next week, I will be in New York City, but I will still be broadcasting live. That's Sunday, August the 10th. It's 5 p.m. Central Time, and where I'll be, it'll be 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and I'll be broadcasting live from New York City. But since I will be there to help my parents move to a senior community, the show will be 1 hour long, from 5 to 6 p.m. Central Time, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. But it'll be a very packed hour. I will be speaking with a guest who will be on the other coast. My guest will be in Los Angeles, California. I will be speaking with acupuncturist, herbalist, nutritionist, Reiki master, speaker, and radio show host, Heather Lansbury, who will be joining us to talk about her new book, Fix Your Mood with Food, so one of my favorite topics. So we will have a regular length of interview, and that will be the way it usually is. And I will also be talking firsthand about the process of moving your loved ones to a senior community, because I'll be right in the midst of that, moving them the next morning after the show. So be sure to tune in live from 5 to 6 p.m. Central, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, or catch it 5 minutes after the show ends on podcast at blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. Or later that night on my website, DrMaraCarpell.com. And if you want to hear information from tonight, you want to read the information from this evening's program or hear tonight's program again, go to my website, DrMaraCarpell.com, and that's DrMaraKarpel. That's E like Peter, EL.com. DrMaraKarpel.com. Or go to blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. You can hear the podcast in 5 minutes. And follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Carpell, Your Golden Years. This evening's program was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Spiked Up Productions, and sponsored by Sonia Das, the Bra Lady, and by Storyhouse. Special thanks to my guest, Dr. Ronald DeVere, and to Tomas Ramirez, the Jazz Manian Devil. Thank you, Art and Russell. Thank you all for listening. Have a peaceful night and inspiring week. And remember, youth has no age. Good night, everyone. Talk to you all next week from the Big Apple.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.